Tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film screening of Stories I've Told the Stars, Friday, September 22nd, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Pacific Northwest College of Arts in Portland. Stories I've Told the Stars is a short documentary that features the stories of three men who left their homes in Ethiopia in the 80s to escape civil war. They share stories of their experiences as refugees, their journey to the United States, and their resettlement in the Pacific Northwest. Stories I've Told the Stars will show Friday, September 22nd from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Pacific Northwest College of Arts, 511 Northwest Broadway, in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On the next Voices for the Animals show, we're going to do a follow-up to our coverage of the ongoing problems at our own Multnomah County Animal Shelter. We will talk with more volunteers about what's being done and not being done since the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners promised a full investigation and improvements.
Honestly, why can't they just start to get things done? But somehow they can't. Somehow there is always a need for another review, always a need for another policy, always a need for another consultant. Just get things done.
Because pets in Portland deserve better, we are keeping the spotlight on the Multnomah County Animal Shelter on the next Voices for the Animals. Listen Friday, September 22nd at 10 a.m. only on 90.7 KBOO FM.
KBOO has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO podcasts, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
You're listening to KBOO Portland's 90.7 FM. The time is 9:02 a.m. Next up is Veterans Voice with Marvin.
Stained flags with no regret. I can't imagine. Please stop the fighting. Please stop the war. Please stop the bombing. 'Cause it's not worth it anymore.
Portland calling. Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, 104.3 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in Hood River, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. I'm Marvin, and Ty is engineering the show today. Been burning a lot of incense on my altar at home for Libya. You know, 11,000 dead and 10,000 still missing from that horrible flood that they had. And Morocco, 3,000 dead, 5,500 injured from an earthquake. And when I heard that, I got a hold of my good friend Tracy. Her children are half Moroccan, and they have family in Morocco. And I was worried that something might have happened to them, but they were far enough away that they didn't get any harm. But still, you know, 3,000 dead, 11,000 dead in Libya. And it's pretty, you know, that's Mother Nature taking a job, you know. I really feel sorry for him. I got, I just want to say hi to some people that always listen in. And one is my good friend Kathy, who's been with us, around us folks for the whole 32 years that we've been on this radio station. And my good friend Tracy, of course, and my good Army buddy, Gary, and his wife Darla, who are right now, they took an Amtrak from Lincoln, Nebraska, out here west, and when I texted him last time, they were in Reno, and they're going to Carson City, and then they're going to go down to San Francisco before they go home. And I'm pretty sure they're going to watch a baseball game. But, you know, and then hello to all the people on the net that listen to us every month, you know. Every month people listen to us on the internet. Also, KBOO 90.7 FM, it's our 55th birthday, and we're going to have a block party. There's going to be food, live music, beverages, and that's going to be here at Southeast 8th Avenue between Ankeny and Ashe, and that's going to be on Saturday the 23rd, and it's going to be from noon to 10 p.m., and I'm glad that they're back. They're a lot of fun, the block parties. Live music and food. It's just a wonderful time. And COVID kind of did a sin on that one. But that's going to be a lot of fun. And if you want to support our radio station, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it. But I always do it by sending a check. And it's, if you want to donate and keep this wonderful radio station on the air. Right now, they're painting the walls and things. And if you want to, you know, support us, you can send us a check at 220 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And we really appreciate it so we can keep our radio station going. As I was coming in through the front door, you go down this, there's like the lobby thing, and then you go down this aisle to get back here to the studios. And there's these big posters that from early on in the 80s and different time periods. And the one, as I was walking by, and I noticed it before, And there was radio, the radio program called Life During Wartime. And I thought, ever since we us folks have been on this radio, it's been a war somewhere. There's been a war that this country is involved in. You know, maybe not boots on the ground, but pumping that money in, you know, putting weapons in there. And just for the war, most of the people who die are civilians. Civilians. They're still cleaning up bombs from the Vietnam. Laos is just full of bombs that didn't go off that are in the ground. Cluster bombs that didn't detonate. Also in Kampuchea, Cambodia, still in Vietnam. There's a, still in Afghanistan. You know? And now, both sides in Ukraine and Russia fighting, both of them are using cluster munition. So that's going to be a really bad mess when this thing gets settled. Because when they go back in, you know, they try to demine these things, but still they're not going to get all of them. And when farmers go back into the fields, our people's walking around, they may step on these things or pick them up and they go off. So I am so much against cluster munition. They are so deadly. So deadly. We've been talking on this show for all these years about folks not joining the military, you know. Especially, you know, since 91, we've always been in war, but since 91, it's really been a big war. I remember Colin Powell talking about we got to be able to fight a two-front war, you know. I remember then we're calling, wait a minute, where's our peace dividend? You know, Russia imploded, Soviet Union imploded, and so, you know, we were all saying, great, now we're going to get some, you know, our peace dividend. No, we didn't get it. And the military budget just skyrocketed. Right now, in 2023, the budget is $857.9 billion. And that's just part of it, because some go that isn't, you know, goes to keeping the nuclear weapons, you know, up to grade. So that's a big... I was reading... I did a lot of reading. Like, I finally got my printer to work, so I've been able to print things up. It only took, like, 3 months, because I'd go in there and try to get it fixed, and it wouldn't work. I'd take off. And so today... yesterday, finally... I text my brother and say, I want to get this working. And so 3 hours later, I finally got it working, and I was pretty proud of myself. But, you know, $857 billion is, you know, a lot of money. And I was reading about, you know, all the money that goes into the military, all the money. So much money. And I was reading, there's an Air Force base in Italy, and I have a hard time pronouncing it, Aviano Air Base. It's in Italy. And they stopped paying for Department of Defense employees and their families' health care. And I saw that, and so I went ahead and was reading the article, and what they said, it's too expensive, we can't afford it anymore. They couldn't afford it. And then I looked back over and I saw $857.9 billion for the military, and they can't afford to take care of the workers in Italy at that air base. They can't do it, but we sure got a lot of money for the military. So that kind of made me kind of angry. Just like the Veterans Administration, if some of the folks make so much money, they can't get the care from the VA. I think that's just crazy. Just crazy. Every veteran should be able to get medical care, mental health, whatever they need from the VA. If they're going to send us to war, like they have for the last 32 years that I've been here, they can afford to take care of the veterans. When the women veterans, the female veterans, are going to give birth, I think they send them to OHSU right next to the VA up on the hill. I think that's where the women go to have their wonderful little babies, is OHSU. But you know, I could talk for 10 days about the mess that we have. And this is really interesting that the armed forces recruiting stations, they don't call them armed forces recruiting stations anymore. They call them armed forces career centers. Career centers. And they're having trouble meeting their quota of bodies to use in these wars. And the Navy didn't get the amount of bodies they needed, the Navy. The Air Force didn't get the amount of bodies they needed. And the Army really didn't get the amount of bodies they needed. The only one that got enough people that they were that they needed was the Marine Corps. But the Marine Corps, you know, not a huge. It's not huge like the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. You know, they're not huge. And I didn't find anything out about recruiting for the Space Force. So I don't know how many, you know, if they got enough people. You know that the Space Force, what they do is they track satellites and things, the satellites. And, you know, that's something new. And that's a real problem when they started to weaponize space. That's going to be a real problem. But I was looking and I was reading these articles about why that these military branches of the military, except for the Marines, were having trouble getting people. And they were really complaining about Gen Z, you know. And I was listening to some on the internet. I was listening to some of these folks talking about why they wouldn't join the military. For one, they didn't want to die in a foreign country. They didn't want to come home wounded, you know, missing arms and legs and you know, just being badly wounded. They didn't want to come home with mental problems, PTSD. They didn't trust the military at all. That was one of the things that they talked about a lot. And the women, the female that they talked to, they didn't want to join the military for the same reasons that the males didn't want, but also they didn't want to go in because of the sexual harassment in the military for women. They didn't want to have to deal with that. And I was watching the then came up the military people, you know. They were saying, well, we've changed a lot, and we're doing this, and we're doing that, and all that stuff. And they have programs where people that are overweight, they go to a program. That's another thing. The health problems. They won't take people in that have. I think they're loosening it up now. Some tattoos on their necks. And they wouldn't take people in that were on Prozac and different things. They didn't want those. The people that were overweight, they didn't want those, but they had this program that they could send these people through before they let them in for their military career. And they, to get them down, it was, I can't remember what percentage of it was, but for the generation that they want to come into the military, you know, a very small percentage of those folks were able to go into the military. A small fraction of those people of that generation. Now, my generation, they were drafting, so a lot of people went in, and now, you know, they have the all-volunteer military, you know, the Army, but, you know, and people during the war in Vietnam, a lot of people were trying to get into the National Guard, they would go into the Air Force or the Navy or whatever. So thinking that they wouldn't go to Vietnam, and most of them didn't go to Vietnam. You know, that was a small portion of my generation that actually went to Vietnam. So I've got some more here. Where'd it go? Leaders of the Army, Navy, and Air Force are dutifully reported that they expected to miss their annual recruiting goal. Every significant concern that the American public has about military service must be addressed head on. Critics should keep in mind that the recruiting crisis has not been caused by just one problem, and it won't be fixed with just one solution. Another thing that these young folk were talking about that they didn't want to be going in and being screamed at, you know, the drill sergeant just screaming in their faces, and just, it was horrible, you know. They called us all kinds of names, you know, and it was just terrible, the hollering and screaming. As soon as you got off the bus, man, they were right there hollering at you. But they say that's changed now. That's not, you know, as bad as it used to be. That these kids are saying, no, we don't want that at all. You don't want to be screamed at. But, you know, you think about it, they volunteered to go in the service. So why should there be, why were they screamed and hollered at? You know, they volunteered to be there. So I guess I just don't get it. And they were given these huge bonuses, I think $50,000 or something, to get folks to come into the military. And then they were given a huge amount of money to keep people that are already in, to get them to reenlist. But I think that they stopped doing that. Or they lowered the amount of money that they're offering people, you know, to stay in the military. So they're having a real hard time on recruiting folks to go into the military. Let's see here. Recruiting has always been known as a tough duty among the military members, even though there are roughly 30 million Americans aged 18 to 24 and the military only needs about 160,000 of them per year to meet their goals. It has never been easy to convince young people to sign up for service. But since 2018, when a strong U.S. economy and a hot job market increased competition, recruiters have been really struggling. Now, in the face of the headwinds described above, they are failing. They're failing. That's pretty interesting. They're failing. I've just thought of something that really interests me about this having trouble with recruiting, but I kind of lost my track of thought on that one. Let's see what else they're talking about. A call to action is needed to increase public awareness about the severity of the situation. Most Americans remain blissfully unaware that their military is literally shrinking by the day, because they don't want to be sent overseas to fight a war that has nothing to do with us. That's why a lot of these folks aren't joining up. They look at Vietnam. They look at Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Africa. They don't want to do that. They don't want to be put in that position where they have to go overseas to fight a war for American interest. You know, I didn't think these kids or these young people, they knew what American interest was, but they did when they was talking to some of these folks. They knew that what American interest is. And a lot, I remember they was talking to this one kid. He must have been like 20, and he said, I don't want to go to another country and get killed or maimed for oil. You know, that's what he said. And a lot of them are really paying attention to what's going on in China, with China. And they weren't interested in being a part of that. So it's just this military is having a hard time. They're going to have to change, you know. But the old timers, all the, you know, the folks that fought in Afghanistan or Iraq, you know, those old timers, you know, they were getting out. Just like in Vietnam, you know, in Vietnam, career military people told their children not to join the army and go to Vietnam. And that was career military people, families. They told their children not to go in the military and to go to Vietnam. They knew that it was a bad thing. And so they told their children, don't do it. Okay, that other thing I want to talk about. The recruiting. Boy, that's really, it's really, really a problem for the military. Unfortunately, it's not clear that our national leaders even understand there is a problem. Although some service secretaries, says Secretary of the Army, Christine Wormuth, and four-star generals have been sounding the alarm. They cannot do it alone without broad support from the White House. Since senior Department of Defense, DOD leaders, and other federal departments, recruiting numbers will continue to flounder. A call to action is needed to increase public awareness of the severity of the situation. The severity. This is larger because the public's possesses an overall positive perception of the armed forces. Earlier they said they didn't have one. And I think now we should go ahead and, Ty, you want to go ahead and play that second song for me? Okay, he's going to play a second song for me so I can get this other stuff in order while he's playing it. So we talked a lot about a lot of different things. So here we go. Thank you.
I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before, where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lives in the balance. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who fanned the flames of the wars that are fought in places where we can't even say the names. They sell us the president the same way they sell us our clothes and our cars. They sell us everything from youth to religion, the same time they sell us our wars. I wanna know who the men in the shadows are. I wanna hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lives in the balance.
That was Jackson Browne, Life's on the Line. Jackson Browne, boy, he's done a lot. He's just a wonderful, wonderful guy. Jimmy Buffett died, you know, Margaritaville, come Monday morning. He was great, but he passed away. You know, he from, I think it from skin cancer. You know, he was a beach guy, a guy that, you know, sailed a lot. You'd think that he would be real careful about that, but he didn't. You know, these young adults were talking about not wanting to go to these different places. The U.S. has 29 U.S. bases in Africa. 29. In Africa, and with the coup in Niger, there's a base there, a drone base and other things. Americans, I don't know what's going to happen with that. They probably may ask them to leave, but you know, I'm not sure. But boy, you know, if you would ask the average American walking down a street, ask them, do you know there are U.S. military bases in Africa? You know, they wouldn't know that. They wouldn't know that there's 29 bases in Africa. And Also, as I was reading these articles and talking to my friends that know more than I do about this, they asked me, how many bases does the U.S. have in New Zealand? And I said, none. And he says, nope, they got two bases in New Zealand. Two bases in New Zealand, of all places. And as I've talked about before, the Philippines. The U.S. has just made a deal with the Philippines. The U.S. and the Philippines agreed to a larger American presence. And they're putting in new bases there. Because they're trying to surround China. You know, The U.S. will expand its presence in Southeast Asia with access to more bases in the Philippines. The two countries announced Thursday. American commitment to the defense of the Philippines is ironclad. Our alliance makes both of our democracies, they always throw that in, democracies, are more secure and help uphold a free and open Indo-Pacific. What they're doing is they're making these new bases, and they all face China. You know that the U.S. is not going to give Egypt, I think, the full amount of money, military money, that they're taking that money from Egypt, and guess where they're putting it? In Taiwan. They're putting all that money into Taiwan. But they don't have enough money to take care of the Department of Defense families and workers in the Italy Air Base. Boy, they got billions of dollars that they spread around the world. We don't even have health care in this country for everybody. But they can make those billions of dollars, trillions of dollars that they spread around the world. You know, some of it's really important to take care of people, but there's always, you know, there's always a catch to it. There's always a catch to it. The U.S. doesn't do anything that doesn't have something for them in it. They are the bullies of the world. They bully other countries. The Department of Defense first announced the move, which is widely seen as a way to deter China influence in the region. Mao Ning, a spokesperson for China's foreign ministry, said the announcement between the U.S. and the Philippines threatened security in the region. The American government has lost its really power in a lot of the world. You know, they've abandoned some countries and just because they weren't useful for them anymore. And I'll talk about one in just a minute. But the U.S. just wants to have that power, the power to control what other countries do. They want that to be the boss, the big bully. The other day, Biden went to India, and India is pretty neutral on a lot of stuff. And I'm pretty sure that India didn't, you know, fall for any of this stuff that the U.S. tries to pull on everybody. They remember when they were ran by Britain. So they're pretty sharp on this stuff. But then he went to excuse me. And then he went to Vietnam. And I thought, why would he go to Vietnam? You know, Vietnam's right there on the South China Sea. Vietnam is really weary of China, even though China and Vietnam trade. But the Vietnam, you know, was controlled for 1,000 years by the Chinese until they beat them, pushed them out of their country. But Biden offered them money to start building computer chips and stuff, you know? And I just, when I saw that, you know, I thought, here's the United States trying to tell Vietnam what to do. And I know that the government of Vietnam is pretty smart on this kind of stuff. So I don't know if they're going to do it or not. We'll find out if they're going to do it. But see, that's what the U.S. does. They offer all this stuff so they can have their little finger in the middle of everybody's business to push them around. And let's say the U.S. expansion is resumption of the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement. See, I think it was, 92 or something like that, that the government of the Philippines kicked the U.S. out. You know, whoa. You know, kicked them out. But now they're back. Now they're back. Okay. Which aims to support combined training and exercise. The pact was initially signed in 2014, but progress has stalled over the years because of former President Duterte's decision to turn away from the U.S. in favor of Beijing. That didn't go over well with the U.S. When the current Marcos government came into power last year, this Marco is the son of the other Marco, who was really horrible. He was a dictator. Came to power last year. Bongbong, that's what his nickname is the son of the late president, dictator Fernando Marcos Sr. The new Marcos has promised to be a good boy. To be a good boy. Over the years, China has grown increasingly aggressive towards its neighbors in the South China Sea by making what other countries say are extensive claims to territory in the crucial waterways and building military installments across the region, among other actions. Philippine officials say allowing the U.S. military to use their bases will help better secure Manila's interest in the South China Sea. And there's this picture. It's a great picture of the Filipino people and holding up this big sign. It says, "Stop U.S. military aid in the Philippines." League of Filipino Students. I was listening to, I can't remember what it was, and they were talking about Iran, the women in Iran, that, you know, they were so angry when that young woman was murdered in a prison because of not wearing the headgear and all that stuff. And so they had this big, you know, really was an uprising. And still to this day, they say 20% of the women will go out without the clothing that the Ayatollahs told them to wear. And they're being really brave, these women, being really brave, because the government of Iran, you know, they hung a bunch of the people who were in those demonstrations. These women are brave, brave, brave women. And the men who support the women are wearing shorts out in public, which is not supposed to do. And they hung a lot of those guys, too. So these people are brave. They're brave. They're standing up. But this Ayatollah that runs it, he's not going for it, you know. He believes if to don't give anybody one step forward. So he just sends out the military, all these forces, and they just brutalize their population. Just brutalizes them. But, sorry, I got off the track there, but I wanted to mention that because those people are so brave, stand up. Many Filipinos have expressed weariness about letting more U.S. servicemen be stationed in the Philippines again. The last U.S. military bases were dismantled in 1992, when a debate over the presence of their presence in the Philippines' sovereignty came to an impasse. Lisa Mesa, the General Secretary of the International League of People's Struggle, a Philippine-based organization that seeks to coordinate anti-imperialist movements, said her group is opposed to more U.S. military presence in the Philippines because of past and continuance about violence against women and LGBTQ community in relation to the presence of U.S. troops. There have been murders and violation of women's rights, and the justice wasn't met, she said. One of the most prominent cases of this is that of Jennifer Loud, a trans woman who was murdered by a U.S. Marine in 2014. Lance Corporal Joseph Scott Pemberton was initially convicted in the Philippines, but was pardoned by former President Duterte and allowed to travel back to his home in the United States. But if you look at the Japanese people are really angry with the military in Guam. Excuse me just a second. Boy, my mouth gets really dry. You know, they're putting more military bases in Guam because they face China. Most of the prominent cases... Oh, that's it. Sorry. But it's not just the Philippines that have trouble with military bases. It's a lot of places where military bases are. Because there's the fighting with the people who live on those islands and live on those around those bases. There's rapes caused by U.S. military. There's murders caused by military guys. I've never heard of any women, but guys. You know, there's this whole problem. You know, when a military base goes in there, a lot of bad things start happening around those bases. You know, there's a lot of... taverns, discotheques, you know. And then there's a lot of, when that happens, there's a lot of prostitution comes in that area. And when prostitution comes, drugs come. So there's a real problem in countries when these military bases, when all these military personnel come to those areas. They cause a lot of trouble. Causes a lot of trouble for countries. But I was reading also where a lot of these countries really don't like the U.S. that much. But one thing they said was that when the military comes and builds bases in their country, they feel a little safer, you know, because they feel if their country's attacked by anybody. And what they're talking about is China. You know, if they're attacked by, you know, outside force, that the U.S. military will step in and help them. But as we know, that's not always true. They pulled out of Vietnam. They pulled out of Afghanistan. They pulled out of Iraq, which they did leave some military there. But, you know, anybody that has any confidence in the U.S. having any staying power are really not thinking quite right. because they have a track record of pulling out of areas. And with the coup in Niger, that's going to be interesting. I'd like to see what I'm going to follow that pretty close to see if they get rid of the military base there in Niger. So that's kind of an interesting situation, because I read where the leader of the coup, which of course is the military, that they were saying they don't need American money, because the U.S. pays so much to for them to be there. And in China's shadow, U.S. rushes back to neglected Indian Ocean island, Mahi Island. At the height of the Cold War, the U.S. Air Force tracking station that monitored Soviet satellites from this island, soaring tropical forest, was a focus of their life. The American servicemen and technicians living nearby hosted barbecues and bar nights to which the people were invited, distributed cookies and milk to local children, and taught them basketball. The Cold War ended, the Soviet Union collapsed, and in 1996, the Americans left, dismantling their tracking station and shutting down their embassy, citing budgetary reasons for abandoning what has seemingly become an irrelevant corner of the world. But right now, with China, they're going back. They're going to open their embassy. They're going to bring the military back in. The United States, supposedly, we the people have a say in what's going on. And it doesn't seem that they're not listening to us. They never listened to us. They've never listened to us. Okay. Today, the compound where Americans, an indigenous party, is home to the Tourism Academy, where young islanders train to be tour guides, hotelers, and masseuse, and they take masseuse classes, among other subjects, in Chinese. This one small manifestation of a new geopolitical rivalry that has now lured the Americans back. In the latest in a string of small nations around the world in which the United States has established, restored, or is planning to open embassies as part of the broad pushback against the influence of China, has acquired during more than the two decades of neglect or disinterest on the part of the United States. But these little islands are going to be in the forefront. Well, let's staple that one together. They show these pictures of this beautiful island. I can't say the name of it that well. It's SEYCHELLES. Offers an example of the ways Americans' absence opened the door to Chinese influence in the 27 years since the United States pulled out. China has built schools, hospitals, houses for low-income families, and public amenities, winning sympathy among who felt abandoned by the United States. They do the little things that Americans don't do. This is where the Americans are weak. There is nothing we can say America built, the president said. of that country. Said, this is why countries like China have come in, and because there was a vacuum. And it's interesting because these islands are just in a position where they are really on the front line against China. We cannot say we are naive. We do understand the competition going on. In the Cold War, we had the United States and the Soviet Union, and now it is the United States and China. Someone woke up and realized how important it is to counter the Chinese influence. The United States now has ground to make up, he said. When you are late at a party, the party starts without you, so you have to make up time. It's a fact that China has been here a long time. They have a lot of sympathy. Most of the new embassies are in the Pacific, a strategic priority against China. The Indian Ocean is also emerging as an arena for competition between Washington and Beijing. No, we're just about out of time. I have this map that shows all these bases and where they're located. Malaysia, Philippines, Taiwan, and there's some on these little islands. First Island Chain, and there's a bunch in Japan and a bunch in South Korea, all facing against China. So, you know, all it takes is one little flame, and that's going to start a war that is like no other war we've ever seen. You know, China won't go along. They have other people that will side with them. And who's going to be in the middle? Us. Us and the people around the world where they're facing off with China. Okay, Ty, you want to go ahead and let's go ahead and close up. And I'm going to close up right now and then you can play the music. We'll be back on October 20th. Hey, that's one day before my 71st birthday. I'll be 75 the 21st of October. And we'll be back October 20th at 9 a.m. And there it is. Go ahead, Ty, start the music. And I miss all.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 10 a.m.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Your cheating heart will make you
September 17th is the 100th anniversary of the birth of Hank Williams Sr., one of the finest singer-songwriters this country has ever produced. KBO Swingin' Country is celebrating this event by dedicating an entire broadcast to the music of Hank Williams. Tune in to KBO Swingin' Country on Saturday, September 30th from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. for 3 hours of all things Hank Williams Considered. We'll have songs sung by Hank, songs written by Hank, and songs about Hank. You don't want to miss it. Once again, that is Saturday, September 30th, from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on KBO.FM or 90.7 FM in the Portland area. Son of a gun, we'll have some fun.
The sweetest one, me, oh my, oh.